From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. So much of Michelle Rinesmith's journey so far was not part of the official plan. From capturing the attention and becoming the mentee of a well-respected NPR veteran, to counseling people diagnosed with potentially terminal cancer, to grappling with her own bouts, yes, that's plural, bouts with cancer, to losing her mother in December, her beloved dog Chloe on February 15th, and her grandmother the very next day, the ride has been anything but predictable and smooth. All of the personal tragedies, of course, took place after she accepted the post of WHQR station manager last summer and made the move in August from Orlando, Florida to Wilmington, North Carolina. Today, we'll find out what Michelle Rinesmith sees as the legacy she's charged with carrying forward, why she no longer fears death, and what she has in store for WHQR. In fact, we will announce the identity of our annual luncheon speaker near the end of today's show. This person will join the illustrious list of past guests who include Cokie Roberts, Robert Siegel, and Ira Flatow, among others. Michelle Rinesmith, what a pleasure it is to welcome you to Coastline.
Well, thank you, Rachel. It's a pleasure to be here.
And we are inviting you to join the conversation. What have you always wanted to ask the station manager of your local public radio station? Have you wondered how certain programming decisions are made? How would you like to see the station grow? You can reach us during this live Thursday discussion at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Michelle, as you know, and as we talked about before this live discussion, we are going to take a deep dive into your background, including some of those personal challenges that you faced. But let's start with some of the big changes coming to WHQR. Tell us first about WHQR's expansion in Brunswick County.
Well, and I'm hoping, I've got my fingers crossed for April, but we are in the process of putting a low-power translator for the classical station on a water tower in Southport, which will allow that area to get the classical, because right now you can pick it up, I mean, online or through the HD aspect, but to actually be able to hear the classical signal. And it'll be on the 96.7 FM channel on your radio once we are up and running. But the other thing is, too, as we're...
So wait a second. That, just to be clear,
yes,
because we have a lot of frequencies going on here,
yes,
and that's something
do.
I'm going to ask you about. But so 96.7 is going to be strictly for people in Brunswick County or people closer to Southport?
It'll be in the Southport area. I'm not exactly sure how far of a reach this translator, this low-power translator, will be. It's I think it's 250 watts. It's the same wattage as the one here in Wilmington for the 92.7. So I'm hoping. I think we're going to be able to hit Curry Beach and some of those places. But until we actually get it up and running, I'm kind of estimating and guessing. But the thing is, as we expand into Southport, we're also looking to expand our classical programming offerings. So we're adding some programs. When I was here in the fall, I did my first on-air traditional pledge drive, and I was asking folks, you know, what do you want to hear? What do you like? What don't you like? And, you know, I had a gentleman who actually emailed me right after I got off the air on the classical side saying, you know, I really would like to hear from the top. And that is one of the programs I'm adding to the classical station. And
that's so, a show.
That is a show.
What kind of a show? What are they?
It's a one-hour show, and it's with young musicians. And it's on stage, it live, and these musicians are performing. And we actually had From the Top come to Fort Pierce once for one of our big anniversary parties.
In Florida,
in
WMFE?
Florida. No, at WQCS.
WQCS.
Yeah, my first station.
Okay.
So, it's a wonderful programming spotlighting young talent in the classical realm. And so that is one of the programs we're going to be adding. So I'm trying to add these shows at the same time we're in the process of expanding our signal range.
What are some of the other can you tell us some of the other shows you're considering putting on the classical channel?
Oh, sure. Performance Today, That's a Monday through Friday, 2-hour program. And then we're going to have performance today, the weekend version, which is 2 hours. So performance today from the top. And I'm trying to think what else is coming on. We're going to be adding some maybe more symphonic, longer pieces, maybe like the New York Phil, that kind of thing. So there's quite a lot happening.
That's some exciting stuff. You kind of slipped in there the fact that you got the idea, or a listener had actually mm-hmm. said, hey, I want to hear from the top during the last fall pledge drive.
Yes.
And we'll talk about the fact that we have a spring pledge drive coming up very soon.
Yes,
a little
we do.
Bit later this month. But you're saying that you listened to the people who called in. We always say that during pledge drives. This is your chance to kind of call in and give feedback, tell us how you think the station is doing, what you like, what you'd like to hear, what you don't like. Mm-hmm. You actually take that input to heart.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you're programming a station, you know, you're looking at ratings. Well, we don't have ratings here. You were the one who...
Wait, what?
You're the one that informed me on that. But, and of course, I gave you probably that, what are you talking about, Willis look, but...
Yeah, I thought I was wrong. You looked at me like I had three heads.
And yeah.
What does that mean for listeners who aren't tuned into ratings?
Typically, markets have Arbitron, which is now Nielsen, and they survey the market. Some stations, it's diary. Other stations, it's the people meters, which is I think it's the top 50 are the people meters. And so with the diary, it comes out the fall and spring, the people, it's constant. And so anyway, when I came up for the interview, I interviewed with Rachel and I said, well, I'm about two things. Ratings and revenue. And she's like, well, there are no ratings here. We're not a surveyed market. And I'm like, what? I never heard of such a thing. So for me, because I don't have the ratings, I'm looking at just adding more surveys and asking folks, because if you don't put on programs that they don't want. I mean, if you put something on and folks don't want to hear it, they're not going to listen. And I'm not here to program the station to what I like. I'm here to program the station to what the listeners like. What is it that you want to hear? I'm just kind of managing the station. This really is a community station, and it's your station. It's not mine.
And so one of the ways that other stations then in other markets gauge how popular programs are with listeners is mm-hmm. is through ratings. How do we do that here then? Other than people kind of randomly calling in during the pledge drive or getting in touch with you, what are some other ways that people can give feedback about the station?
Well, you can always give feedback. You can always, it doesn't have to be during a pledge drive. You can always contact me and, send me an email or call and say, hey, I want to hear this or I'd like to hear that.
Do we ever do surveys?
I think you were doing like a yearly survey in the spring, but I want to add more surveys. One thing that we used to do at QCS, my first station, we had a thing in that would actually be mailed out with the membership information, and it was, check boxes. So, and then you could add comments as well. So that way we knew, okay, this person likes the classical side of the station, or they like the news side, and this is the programs that they like or love, and these are the ones they would like to see, or this is something they don't like hearing, So that really helped, because then we would log all that information so that we could pull it up anytime.
When you kind of – you've been here now. We're talking with WHQR station manager Michelle Rinesmith, by the way. She's been on the job for just a hair more than 6 months. And, Michelle, as you look down the barrel of the next 6 months, mm-hmm. one of the big projects that will be in front of you is budgeting for the next fiscal year. We've talked about the growth of the classical side in Brunswick County. Are there other areas of growth that you see for WHQR?
Oh, I see tons of growth. There's so much potential here. In terms of, we just finished a highly successful capital campaign. I came on after it was already over, but we're adding and expanding and upgrading our technology, which is something that we need to do. We just added an new importer-exporter, so that we won't have these digital drops. That's been installed. One of the other upgrades, we're changing our phone system. And so, right now, you cannot take calls during Coastline when we're in a pledge drive.
Right.
Well, that's going to change. But it's not going to happen during the next pledge drive, unfortunately. It takes, I think, like 60 days for the whole phone thing. So we're working on it. But it hopefully by the time the fall comes, then we'll have that in place. Down the road, I want to create the silent drive concept here.
Well, tell us about that. First of all, the spring pledge drive is coming up, mm-hmm. and that is going to be, for all intents and purposes, a traditional major fundraiser. We do two of those on the air a year, and that begins middle of March.
March 15th.
And it runs through the 21st, but we're hoping we can take a day off?
Yes.
How?
Well, if everyone gets their donation in on time and early, if we meet that goal, and I think it's $150,000, then we'll end it on Tuesday versus Wednesday.
What is a silent drive? What does that mean, and how do you do it? When you came here, you'd never done an on-air pledge drive. You were used to doing silent drives.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, I've been in public broadcasting over 20 years, but I've never had a traditional on-air pledge drive. I've always done silent. I've always had silent. And so silent drives, you don't interrupt programming. You have these messages that air during the regular breaks. And it runs for about 6 to 7 weeks, and people are like, oh my gosh, that's a long time. But if you do it right, you won't feel like it's stale and stagnant. It's basically heavy in the production side, and it's getting as much on the air as possible and rotating it every 2 days.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. We're meeting Michelle Rinesmith, WHQR's station manager since August of last year. This is a chance for you to get to know her a little bit and ask your own question during this live Thursday discussion. When we come back from this break, we'll hear about where she lived before Wilmington, what led her to WHQR, and how a couple of life-threatening bouts with cancer changed the way she sees life and death. You can call us during the live Thursday discussion, 910-343-1138, or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're talking today with WHQR station manager Michelle Rinesmith. It's her first public get-to-know-you interview, and we're inviting your questions during this live Thursday discussion. What have you always wanted to ask the manager? What do you want to know about WHQR? About Michelle Rinesmith. She'll answer almost anything within reason. You can either call us at 910-343-1138, or you can email us today at coastline@whqr.org. And Michelle, before we get into kind of where you were before you came to Wilmington, North Carolina, we have an email from Nick who writes, "So glad you've taken the job here."
Oh, that's so sweet.
And he says, "I'm in my 30s. And it always seemed like the station was geared towards much older patrons. Some of the new weekend shows seem to be more geared to a younger crowd. I love Communique, the Census Shorts, the New Yorker Hour, other new weekend shows. Really miss Rick Steves. And my biggest pet peeve," he says, "is Here and Now not getting 2 solid hours anymore. Please bring back 2 hours of Here and Now and drop State of Things." Mm. Thanks, Nick.
Okay. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, I did drop Travel with Rick Steves, and I put on Hidden Brain. So, you know, and it's a way—
With Shankar Vedantam.
Yes, and it's really a way to kind of test some programs and see, do they work, do they not work, you know? And it's also budget, you know, when you're thinking about the budget. By bringing on Hidden Brain, I was able to cut some costs, and, you know, everything's negotiable, and I'm always one who wants to negotiate pricing.
That is, I can vouch for that. Now, Michelle Rinesmith, you didn't start out your college career thinking, I'm going to go into public radio as a lifelong career. I don't know how many people do, actually, unless they're headed for NPR. They come to a member station, they kind of get in touch with the creativity, the values, and, you know, if it's in your DNA, you kind of get hooked, and clearly it was in yours. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your first internship.
Well, I didn't even know what public radio was. I never heard of it. When I was 15, I went to my first rock concert. I saw Bon Jovi in Madison Square Garden. And I came home that night because my mom was up. She was worried about me. And I said, Mom, I know what I want to be when I grow up. And she's like, what? I said, I want to be a roadie. And so I wanted to travel with rock bands and help set up.
I thought you were going to say a rock star.
No.
But no.
Oh, no.
A roadie.
Oh, yeah. I've always wanted to be behind the scenes. I've never wanted to be out front. In fact, when I would do stuff, when I started interning at WQCS, and basically my parents decided we needed to do something to get this child into some kind of a career. So I did go to college for film and television production, basically to, you know, become a roadie. And so I ended up interning at our local community college. They had a public radio station there on the college campus, and I interned in the radio department, in the news department, actually. And so I was an intern in the news, and I went by Michelle Mitchell, and I've always used Mitchell as my on-air last name. And so, again, because I like being behind the scenes. So this is like a huge change now, being the station manager and stuff. And
you are very much up front.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm very approachable. I don't have any filters anymore, especially with everything I've been through. But, yeah, so that's kind of where it started. I wanted to be a roadie. I got into public radio, fell in love with it. And I ended up going from an intern to a part-time position to eventually a full-time position. And then that led to me kind of handling things when my boss got sick.
And we're going to talk about Madison Hodges in just a couple of minutes. We had a call from Mark from Wilmington. You're listening to Coastline, by the way. We're talking today with WHQR station manager Michelle Rinesmith, who's been at the helm for a little more than 6 months now. And this is her first public kind of get to know you Q&A and interview. So if you'd like to call us during this live Thursday discussion, you can do that at 910-343-1138 or just email us like Nick did at coastline@whqr.org. So Mark from Wilmington says, similar to using Phil Furia with gas, that is my favorite acronym in the world. That's Great American Songbook. What about using more local expertise with events? Is it cost effective? Is this something you could expand? Now, obviously, Mark is referring to the recent live event that WHQR held on UNCW's campus at Keenan Auditorium, where Phil Furia of the Great American Songbook and a whole bunch of local luminaries with all kinds of different talents performed some of the greatest songs of all times.
Oh, yeah. There's so much talent here.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, what I love about our Saturday nights is that, you know, for the most part, it's local from 8 o'clock on, except for the 10 o'clock hour. And so we are putting on a local show that will follow George. And it's one of his buddies from Connecticut who now lives here.
Can you tell us?
I think it's going to be called On the Fly.
Okay.
And it's like old rock, folk. I mean, it's going to really combine well with the programs that are already there, with John's show at 8 o'clock and George at 9 with Soup to Nuts Live. And then we go into blues with Lan at 11. So I love that. I love that local aspect that and doing more of it.
That's Lan Nichols, host of Front Street Blues. We do have quite a bit of local content that goes on, music local content that goes on the airwaves. Do you foresee doing any more live events as part of community outreach with WHQR? For instance, community conversations or...
Oh, yeah, we're already talking about that.
Oh, can you tell us more? or we not going to reveal that yet?
I don't know if we're ready to reveal that yet, but we are definitely talking, and it is something that we are working on.
It's my job to ask inappropriate questions.
Oh, no. You can ask me anything.
And it's your job to put up the wall when needed. Okay. What about doing a local version of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me live? Can you see that happening?
Oh, I would love to have Wait, Wait. Unfortunately, we don't, you know, they're looking for the bigger arenas.
Yeah, I'm talking about a local version.
A local version of
it. Yeah, where we, you know.
That would be interesting.
Jokes about local officials.
Oh, yeah. You know, do like a roast kind of thing in terms of Wait. Yeah, no, that would be interesting.
Now, you talked about going into an internship at WQCS in Florida. That internship wound up turning into a full-time job.
Correct.
What was that job?
Well, I started out, it was traffic and, traffic and billing. And then...
A lot of people don't know what traffic is. They think you're talking about doing traffic reports. This exit at I-40. What is traffic?
That's a good point. Traffic in our world is actually the log. It's the automation. It's what you hear on air. It kind of sets the tone for everything. And so I was the one handling the on-air programming of the station behind the scenes. And so I was doing that, and then I became the business manager when Madison came on board. Madison Hodges had worked at, he started out at Florida Public Radio as the GM, and then he went to NPR for 10 years, and he was the ombudsman for NPR, and then he came to work at WQCS.
And he was a superstar at NPR. I mean, when he passed in 2014, and NPR did a story on, they memorialized him.
There's an award in public broadcasting. It's the Public Media Innovator Award. And it's given out every year. And I think this is like the third or fourth year of it. So, yes.
In his honor.
In his honor. It has his picture and everything.
Now, Michelle Rinesmith, you captured his attention. I mean, he made you business manager. Mm-hmm. And you also, he also mentored you.
Yes.
And so many of the lessons that you've brought here, we hear Madison Hodges' name all the time come up here. You know, you'll say, this is how Madison did it, or this is what Madison taught me. And that goes really deep for you. He was a key figure in your professional and personal development.
He was the first person that truly saw what I could be, who I could be. He saw more in me than I ever saw in myself. I'd had a station manager prior, and, you know, before he left, he said, you know, I never thought you would mount to anything. You always surprised me. And that was his way of complimenting me. And then Madison came in, and it was like, you know, his philosophy was, there's nothing you can't do. And so, you know, that's how I look at things, and that's how I approach, you know, when it comes to managing other folks, is that, you know, I'm here to lift you up, not tear you down. You know, tearing somebody down is not, it's just not productive. And so I want to lift you up and inspire you and encourage you.
And Madison also developed a metric to measure the financial equivalent of the community impact made by stations on behalf of the schools that operate them. Mm-hmm. The metric incorporated Arbitron data, listener contributions, other impact. You know this metric.
Yes.
Inside
and
out.
It's a mathematical formula that just, yeah, it's crazy.
And what was the benefit of that? I mean, why was that such a big deal that he developed that?
Because he wanted to make it more cost effective for stations that were smaller when it came to the news magazines and how the pricing was set up for Morning Edition and All Things Considered. And those are considered the news magazines, those two.
Now, as we've established, he was really important to you professionally.
Yes.
And personally, really helped you kind of step into this great potential. He got sick.
Yes.
In 2013. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that?
He, all of a sudden, we came back from spring break, and I noticed he was walking with a limp, and I got concerned because I had had cancer. Actually, the first time I had cancer was at 29-30. I was diagnosed right after my mom. My mom had been diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and then shortly after, I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. And so we went through chemo together. Hers was more experimental than mine, obviously. But anyway, just as I was coming up on my 5 years, because that's the key to get to that 5-year mark, I was struck down again. And this time it was much more life and death for me. I went from walking just like any person, you know, normally, to having a cane, to being in a wheelchair within 3 months. And I was in a wheelchair for about a year. I had a sarcoma. It's a cancerous tumor behind my right knee. And the option was to, the main option was to amputate, to do an above-the-knee amputation. That's typically what they do with sarcomas. And so, but I felt like I could save the leg and save my life. And so we ended up at the top three cancer hospitals in the country in
year. Why did you think that? I mean,
I
so many people
it.
Would have just taken the doctor's opinions at that point and said, okay, well, if that's what we have to do, then that's what we'll do. And you refused.
I refused. Oh, yeah. One of the things
you
that—
You hauled your parents around the country in search of a different opinion.
Yeah, we went to MD Anderson in Houston, and then we ended up at Sloan Kettering in New York City. And that's where I had the surgery. It was in New York. They went in, they cut me the back of my leg from right below my right buttocks all the way to almost my ankle. It looks like it's hard to see now, but it used to look like a real, like Zorro had, you know, cut me open kind of thing. But yeah, it was a pretty intense surgery, and it was an 8-hour surgery.
And it was iffy too.
And it was very iffy.
You didn't know when you went into that surgery if you were going to come out with your leg.
Right, correct. I mean, before they put me under, I was watching them prep, and I saw them bringing out the saws and stuff, and yeah, I was well aware of what could happen. In fact, when I woke up, when I was in recovery, the first thing I said to the nurses, do I still have my leg? You know, and I made her actually help prop me up so I could see my leg, because I couldn't feel it. I was numb. But I wanted to make sure, and it was all bandaged up and it was hard to see. She's like, but it's there. And so I knew I still had it. But we still weren't sure because they did a biopsy. And so I had to wait up in New York for about a month. We stayed in New Jersey in a hotel in Jersey. But I had to wait a month to find out the results of that before they would release me. Because if it was a aggressive sarcoma, they would have gone back in and amputated. They would have had to, because what happens with a sarcoma typically is that it goes to your lungs, and from your lungs, it'll go to your brain. So that seems to be the path. I mean, I'm not a doctor, so I can't say these things. But the thing that I learned was that, you know, you have to be your own advocate when it comes to your health. And so when the doctor said to me, "Well, we're going to amputate," I was like, "No, you know, what are my other options here?" And so when Madison started limping, I got concerned because going through what I went through the second time.
Madison Hodges, your mentor.
My mentor. And so he had a sarcoma, but his sarcoma, it was a combination of multiple tumors, and they were in his hip and back. And he even said if it had been in his arm or leg, they would have amputated. But because it was in his hip and back, they could not amputate. It was a rare type of cancer. And so he went through treatments for about a year before he passed.
It seems like it didn't take very long. He was diagnosed in 2013, passed in July 2014. What kind of impact did his passing have on you?
It was huge. Because, you know, I mean, I've lost folks to cancer that I've counseled. I mean, friends as well as folks that I've become friends with just through the whole counseling process. But to lose him, I mean, I really believed that miracles do happen. And I still believe miracles do happen. I thought he would beat it. I thought that he would still be around. And so it was very hard. I ended up going to see a grief counselor for about a year and a half just to kind of get my thoughts together. And it was my grief counselor who said to me, you know, in comparing the impact Madison had on me, it was like I was walking around in the desert, and then all of a sudden somebody gave me a glass of water, and that glass of water was Madison. I mean, he taught me so much. And so, yeah.
And your own bouts with cancer, so this second one that involved the sarcoma in your leg, that was potentially life-threatening, and then you also went through cancer with your mother,
right?
Not once, but twice, or more?
I mean, we went through it together because we were going through it at the same time, but before I came here, she had been in remission for 16 years, and last March, we found out that she was out of remission and that the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma was back.
And she passed in December.
December 6th, yeah.
Which is very, very recent. And I'm sure that I can speak for all of us when I say how deeply we feel for you and, offer you deepest condolences for that. So many of us, I know, are wondering how you soldier on in a new town, in a new job. This is your first job as station manager. This is the first time that you've been in North Carolina. You left behind your brother. Your father has traveled up here with you since your mother passed, but he's going to be going back to Florida later this month. This is a lot of life change concentrated in just a few months, Michelle.
Yeah, it's not exactly how I saw things going. Yeah. That's for sure. I don't know. I mean, it's just a matter of getting up every day, putting your pants on and your shirt on and just soldiering on. I mean, I know that there are no guarantees. I've been through so much that I understand that. And so, you know, every day is a gift. And so I continue on because obviously it's not my time yet. You know, my mom and my grandmother always would say, the day you're born, it's written, the day you will die. Now, my grandmother would add a little added, little extra thing in there. And she would say to me when I was little, you know, the rest of it's a blank slate and it really is up to you to fill it. And so because it's not my time yet, I'm here to fill that slate.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. We're meeting WHQR station manager Michelle Rinesmith. After this break, you'll have one more segment to get your question in during the live Thursday discussion. You can either call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're having a conversation with WHQR station manager Michelle Rinesmith about her plans for station changes and growth, how she makes programming decisions, and also why cancer has had such a profound impact on the way she sees her life. You can ask your own question of Michelle on this Thursday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. And just a reminder, this is the last segment, so you have just a few minutes to get your own question in. And Michelle, before we continue with kind of why cancer has been so profound for you, beyond just tragedy, because it's actually shaped the way you think about a lot of things and the way you see your life and the way you see death. But first, on a lighter note, Joe emails us and says, just wanted to second the earlier listener comment about state of things. Joe writes, sometimes the program is locally interesting and other times it's quite Durham-centric, especially the music segments. If there is a way to perhaps give it half the airtime and selectively air only the segments or episodes that are of more local or broadly statewide interest. Thanks and keep up the good work.
Okay. Interesting.
Thank you for that comment, Joe.
Yes, thank you.
And Kay writes, just heard a caller who wanted to drop the show State of Things. Please don't. State of Things is why I tune in during the early afternoon. Okay. Here and now, I could take it or leave it, just another news program. State of Things is about this state, local music, local things. Great show. And Carl writes, I've been listening to WHQR for years. I'm glad you stopped doing the Friday feedback on air. It was like, okay, I'm not going to read that whole comment. Thanks again, Carl. Nice to hear from you. You can send in your own comment by either email, coastline@whqr.org. You can call us, 910-343-1138. If you're just joining us, we're talking with WHQR station manager Michelle Rinesmith. And she talked earlier in the program about how she makes programming decisions and why listener input is so, so important. So we want to hear from you. Now, you've talked about your own bouts with cancer and how challenging they've been. You actually became kind of a counselor for some people. People started calling you and saying, Michelle Rinesmith, you need to talk to this person who was just diagnosed with cancer. Tell us about the first time that happened.
Well, it was just, you know, being the irony of it all. I had just finished my chemo and radiation for the first cancer, and a good friend of mine who worked in the print business, and he used to do a one-minute show on the radio station, he was diagnosed with colon cancer. And so I started, like, saying things to him, like, you know, you probably will notice this metal taste in your mouth. So one thing that I learned, you know, I needed to use plasticware versus silverware. I used a straw. I didn't want to drink out of a can. I would go for a bottle instead, or, you know, that kind of thing. And so I was giving them little tidbits here and there, things that, you know, normal a doctor won't say. You know, they'll tell you, okay, if you possibly might lose your hair, if there's going to be some nausea involved, that kind of thing. But I was giving tips and stuff on things that maybe they don't cover. And he said to me, he goes, you know, he got through it, and he's like, you're such a natural, you should do this more often. And I'm like, okay. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, I received a call from somebody just saying, hey, did you know that so-and-so over in A building at the college, which was our administrative building, was diagnosed with breast cancer? And no, didn't know. And so I thought, oh, what the heck? So I went over, and I really didn't know this person. She was a VP at the college, and I just kind of plopped in and said, hey, I'm Michelle, and, you know, I hear you have cancer. Well, I've had it too, and let's talk. And that's the thing, you know, not only will I go in right at the beginning and introduce myself and kind of build that relationship, but I'm always there, and I go through the whole thing with you, and if you need me, I'm a phone call away. And so I started basically counseling folks on campus, on the college campus, that were coming down with cancer. It just, all of a sudden I had this like network of people. It wasn't something I planned. It was just something that happened. And of course, the gentleman who had gone through the colon cancer, it came back a couple years later, and he passed away. He only battled it for about a month after it came back.
There was a woman who was diagnosed with, you plopped down on her couch. Somebody said, you need to go talk to this woman.
Yes.
You plopped down on her couch and you said, you don't know me. My name is Michelle Rinesmith, but we're going to be really good friends.
Yeah. Because the thing is, we're talking about personal things, you know.
And that turned out to be true.
And that did turn out to be true. And she had a rare breast cancer. She was either stage 3 or stage 4. It didn't look good. But she beat it.
She beat it.
She did beat it. And one of the things a couple of years later, she said to me, she decided to go get her physical therapy degree. And it was because she realized that massage really helped afterwards because, you know, you're sore, I guess. I mean, because I've never dealt with breast cancer, but from what I've heard, when the lymph nodes are removed, there's sometimes a lack of mobility in the arm, and there's pain. And so physical therapy does help. Massage helps. And so she became a physical therapist, not as a profession, but to do it on the side to help others who are going through cancer, breast cancer type stuff. And I said to her, I said, that's amazing that you're doing this. And she said to me, she's like, well, I learned from the best. I learned from you. You know, I'm just following in your footsteps and what you've done. And that just, I mean, I in the middle of the cafeteria at the college, I just wanted to cry because that was just so amazing. I had no idea.
And you've had other encounters with people that you've felt have been really kind of maybe not coincidental. You tell a story about going into a public restroom in a restaurant once and hearing a woman vomiting. Tell us about that.
Well, we had been at this restaurant. We left. It was 4th of July, and I was there with a girlfriend of mine. And we all of a sudden we needed to use a bathroom, and nothing was open. So we thought, well, let's go back to the restaurant that we were at. So we did. And I'm in the bathroom, and the stall next to me, there was a woman, and she was throwing up. And so when I came out, she was at this point by the sink trying to clean herself up, and she was crying. And she started apologizing profusely to me about the fact that she had been sick. And I'm like, sweetheart, please do not apologize. You know, I have thrown up in some of the most expensive places and some of the not so expensive places. It doesn't matter. It's like when you're sick, you're sick. And if somebody has a problem with that, that's their problem, not yours. And so she's like, you know this? And I'm like, oh yeah, I've had cancer. And she's like, well, she had just been diagnosed. And her diagnosis was not good. Basically, if she did the chemo, it might have prolonged her life by 2 months, if that. And she knew it, and she was accepting of it. And she's like, look, I want to just die. I want to live out what little I have. I don't want to be going through the chemo. It's just not worth it. But my family, my husband, you know, they all want me to do this. And I said, it comes down to what you want. And if you're okay, that should be all that they need. You know, it's not the quantity, it's the quality of life.
And that's one of the things that you've counseled a lot of other people about.
It's, right.
Like, to you, it's so important to get the message across, it's okay to go.
Yes.
It's really okay to go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, when I saw my mom Thanksgiving week and, you know, the therapist or nurse said to her, so what is your goal in order to get out of here? And she said, to be independent again. And when reality was, she probably never would be. She left, and it was okay. You know, I miss her. I miss her terribly. But life is that way. I mean, it's, you know, if you can't enjoy your life, if you can't find a reason to get up the next day, and you should, you know, when you're that sick, and you know, it's okay to go. I mean, I said that to Madison. I told him, I said, I don't want you to linger. I don't want you to stay here just because you feel like you have to. You know, when you're ready to go, go. And he did. He left. He died very quickly.
Why is it that you don't have a fear of death, really?
I guess because of what I've been through. You know, I feel like death is not the end. It's just the beginning of something else. I'm a very strong believer in that. I've got, you know, angel statues all over my house to because it gives me peace and it reminds me that we're not alone, that kind of thing.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with WHQR station manager Michelle Rinesmith. She's been on the job now for a little more than 6 months, and this is her very first kind of public Q&A session, mm-hmm. a chance for you to get to know her. We've talked about some of her personal challenges, and in the beginning of this discussion, she explained how she approaches programming decisions. But Michelle, one of the things that you said earlier on was that programming this station, the decisions that you make about mm-hmm. shows, are not about what you personally like. This is really about shaping a programming schedule for the audience here. But tell us what you personally like. If it was just about what you wanted to listen to, who are you that way? What are the shows that most draw you in?
Well, I always joke, and, you know, on the classical side, I would be playing Bolero like 24/7 because I love that piece. but actually, I'm a big Thistle and Shamrock fan. And so, and yes, I did drop Thistle to add Mountain Stage. And
how did you arrive at that decision?
Cost, for one. You know, the cost of Mountain Stage, which is 2 hours versus Thistle, it was still less expensive than Thistle. And then we didn't even add the Across the Blue Ridge, which also had a cost to it. So that was one thing. But it was, it was just, you know, okay, this is something different. This is something new. Let's try it. For the station anyway, something new and different. I did bring it on down at QCS, and it was very successful. So I thought, okay, let me just pull it out because it's one of those. When I dropped Prairie Home, I added Mountain Stage. A lot of stations did because Prairie Home for us at QCS was 21,000 and Mountain Stage is like 3,000.
Wow, that's a big difference.
A huge, huge difference.
$21,000 a year, and that's something many of our listeners probably know. WHQR dropped Prairie Home Companion, largely because Garrison Keillor was retiring. Is that right?
Well, yeah, and that's why I did it. I mean, it was the time to do it when Garrison announced, because once he announced his retirement, they came back and said, okay, here's the pricing for this. And they were going to give me a slight discount. It was going to $18,000 versus $21,000. That wasn't much of a discount. So I decided to try some other things. And by saving that money on Prairie, I was able to bring back Performance Today. I was able to add other programming. But the programming that I like, I love The Talk. You know, I'm a huge 1A fan. I love Hidden Brain, Radiolab, those kind of programs.
Now, speaking of something you just mentioned, we promised at the beginning of this show that you would do a big reveal. You have an announcement. Every year, WHQR puts on its annual fundraising luncheon, and there's usually some big NPR superstar who comes to speak. A few years ago, we had Cokie Roberts. We've had Robert Siegel, who just retired as host of All Things Considered. We've had Science Friday's Ira Flatow. We've had a whole list of really Don Gagne, the, you know, big political reporter for NPR. The big political reporter. So tell us.
Are you ready?
Here's our high-tech drum roll.
Okay. It's going to be Joshua Johnson from 1A.
Ah!
I am so excited.
Joshua Johnson, the new host of 1A. He took over after Diane Rehm retired. They changed the show from the Diane Rehm show to 1A. That's so exciting.
Yes. I'm thrilled. And he's a Florida boy, too. So it's like, hey, we're both Miami Hurricane fans. It's all about the U.
And so folks can start. Tickets are not on sale for that yet.
But I would say get in touch with our membership department because, you know, we had somebody come in yesterday who found out. I'm not exactly sure how he found out, but he was like, I want to get my seat. So, yes. So, yes, please do. And I guess I'll have a table. So, and I don't know anyone. So if you want to sit at my table, let us know.
And when is that happening, that annual luncheon with Joshua Johnson?
I believe it's May 18th.
May 18th. Okay. So get in touch with the membership department about that. We have a spring pledge drive coming up May or March 15th through hopefully the 20th. We're trying to take a day off.
Yes.
And for folks, again, who haven't given to the station before, and who are going to hear this pledge drive coming up, what would you encourage folks to think about?
Well, I would say, you know, if do your part. You know, if you love this station, it really is a public radio station for a reason. It's, you know, you're helping to pay for the programming. You're helping to support this station in a way that you don't find on commercial radio. That's why you don't have, you know, Crazy Eddie doing his weird commercials that he used to do on TV. So, yes, I mean, everybody has a reason why they listen to this station. And so by helping to support it, it's like you're giving yourself a gift.
And it's interesting. Can I out you about the fact that you're in the leadership circle? I just did that.
Mm-hmm.
There, I did it.
Yeah, you did. And I do it as a sustainer because it makes it so much easier. You know, you're doing it in little chunks versus a big chunk.
Yeah, and I don't know anything about your personal wealth, but I still think that's a big deal for you. You're a working person.
I work for a public radio station.
It means a lot to you.
It does.
Michelle Rinesmith, what a pleasure having you with us today. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel.
Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Caitlin Hanrahan was today's chief engineer. Caroline DeVries is our webmaster and today's call screener. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast, find it on the WHQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.